Hello and welcome to the Tantramar Report. Today is Friday, June 4th, and you're tuned in to CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. The CHMA studio is located in the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the Treaties of Peace and Friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Meg Cunningham. Here's what's coming up today. Port Elgin Regional School is fundraising for their in-school kitchen, which will be up and running by September. We speak with two 7th grade students who organized Disability Awareness Week at Port Elgin. Pharmacist Charles Beaver encourages New Brunswickers to book an appointment for a vaccine this weekend. New Brunswick has 16 new cases of COVID-19, the highest daily case count since May 13th. And an oversight committee has been put together regarding the new unknown neurological disease in New Brunswick. But first, the COVID-19 update. Another New Brunswicker has died as a result of COVID-19, this time in Zone 3, the Fredericton region. The person was in their 70s, and their passing brings the total number of lives lost to COVID-19 to 44. New Brunswick has 16 new cases of COVID-19, the highest single-day case count since May 13th. Three of those new cases are in the Moncton region, Zone 1, and all of them are close contacts of previously reported cases. Zone 1's active cases have been steadily increasing since May 22nd and now sits at 45 active cases. The Fredericton region, Zone 3, continues to report new cases as the B.1.617 variant continues to spread. Yesterday, they announced 5 new cases, most of which were close contacts, with one outlier still under investigation. There is a temporary outdoor testing clinic in Nakawik, which is in Zone 3, after a list of potential areas of exposure was released to the public. The majority of the new cases are in Zone 6, the Bathurst region, which discovered 8 cases. Similar to Zone 3, all but one case is a close contact of a previously reported case. That one case is still under investigation. There are over 318 cases still under investigation in New Brunswick, according to the COVID-19 dashboard. 5 New Brunswickers are hospitalized in total. 4 of them are in New Brunswick hospitals, including one in an intensive care unit. One patient is in a hospital outside of the province and is in an intensive care unit. The province is still 10% shy of its goal to get 75% of the population vaccinated with at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. Right now, 65.8% of New Brunswick's population over the age of 11 has received at least one dose. With just 3 days to go before the Path to Green kicks off on June 7th, the province is calling on all eligible New Brunswickers 12 and older to book appointments this weekend. As the days count down to New Brunswick's June 7th goal line, Erica Butler calls up Charles Beaver to find out how the vaccine rollout is going at the corner drugstore in Sackville.
Charles Beaver, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're talking to you today to touch base again about this race to get people vaccinated in New Brunswick. The pressure is on because we have the Path to Green opening plan or reopening plan. So have you been busy these last, since that plan has been announced? Have you seen an uptick in people wanting to get their first dose?
Well, honestly, no. We seem to have about the same numbers as we have been having. I know that there's other clinics going on, like at the Civic Center and whatnot, but last I heard earlier in the week, it was 87,000 more vaccinations needed to meet the target by next Monday, and that's more than the province has, been able to administer altogether in a week. So we're going to need everybody that is, intending to get one, but just hasn't got around to it to get around to it sooner than later.
Yeah. How busy has the corner drugstore been in the past week, or and what have you got coming up for next week?
Well, we've been very busy, of course. As of today, we've given just over 2,700 doses at corner drugstore. So you know, certainly a lot of people have responded. We still have a full day of Pfizer vaccinations today on Friday, and there's still quite a few spots open, so people can go to thecornerdrugstore.ca to register, and we can get you in, or if it's, you know, not early enough in the morning to do it that way, they could call the pharmacy as well, 536-2255. Also, I know the Horizon Health has a clinic going on at the Civic Center on Saturday, the 5th, and that's in time to meet the Monday deadline. Last time I heard, they were provincially, their clinics are only about just over half full, so I'm sure that they'll be looking for people and focusing on first doses for folks that want one and haven't received one yet, and that's Pfizer vaccinations as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you already know what your supply will be like for next week, or I mean?
Yeah, we do. We have we're giving Pfizer through Wednesday and Thursday clinics of next week, the 9th and 10th. You know, we have 180 to give those 2 days. The following week, we're receiving another 300. So the supply is going to be robust, which is good. You know, so that we can get started on second doses.
Yeah, and there's been new guidance with that. So, yeah, explain a bit about how that will start rolling out.
Sure. Well, right now, everybody who wants a second dose can register the same way as they would have at Corner Drug Store for the first dose, simply by going to thecornerdrugstore.ca and selecting. Now there's icons for dose two, Pfizer, and dose two Moderna. Most folks are going to be looking for Pfizer because that's most of what we have given so far. For folks who did receive the AstraZeneca vaccine, we now have guidance that people who have received AstraZeneca for the first dose and are over age 55 can receive AstraZeneca again as the second dose, or their choice of they can receive an mRNA vaccine as the second dose if they wish, and that would be Pfizer. Both are effective and both are considered safe. Second dose AstraZeneca has probably of close to a tenfold even less likely to have the very rare clotting problem that the first dose does, so it's quite safe. And folks that want to discuss the differences and what to expect from that should call and speak to the pharmacist or their healthcare provider.
And people who want their second dose of AstraZeneca, if they're choosing AstraZeneca, they can actually get it a bit earlier, right? As long as it's 8 weeks has passed since your first dose, you can call to get in for that.
Yeah, yes, you're quite right. 8 weeks is the minimum interval, and folks that have received it 8 weeks or more ago, we actually started a clinic today because the very first doses we gave were 8 weeks ago today, and we'll have another clinic coming up on Tuesday, June 8th, to catch folks that we would have given the first dose to on Monday, April 12th, which was 8 weeks before that. So that's all happening too next week.
Okay.
And in the weeks to come.
And so, I mean, this is because NACI has sort of ruled, you know, based on studies that, you know, mixing the doses is okay. And will that also apply to, you know, if I got a Pfizer vaccine, can I get a Moderna or vice versa?
That guidance is there, and yes, it's okay to although it's preferable to stay with the same brand, is the guidance from NACI. It's okay to go to a different mRNA brand, so that would be Pfizer or Moderna, and that's going to come into play because the supply of Moderna is not quite as steady in this last few weeks, although there's recent information indicating that we should be receiving more in the weeks to come, hopefully, here in Canada. So that means if a person had Moderna and their, you know, first, if a person received it in March, those would be the first ones that we're going to be giving their second doses of. And if they want to wait for the same brand like Moderna, that's fine. But if not, we're okay to give them the Pfizer. And when they register in, you know, on the cornerdrugstore.ca, one of the pieces of information that will be taken is the date and brand of their first vaccination, so that we can do them in the correct order according to, you know, who got it first, and then who needs to be done. Second dose will be done first, mostly the 85-year-olds and up, and then working our way down by age, because that's how they were done for the first doses.
So you also had some advice that you wanted to share about how to dress, you know, what your best sort of outfit is for going to get your vaccine, because it can affect, I guess, the whoever's giving you the injection, what you're wearing can affect their ability to do that.
Yes. Just a reminder to folks that in order for the vaccinator to properly landmark the shoulder, it's important for them to be able to expose their entire shoulder right from the bony top part to the armpit, so that the injector can properly landmark the acromion and see the armpit, and then basically position the vaccination in the center area of the deltoid reliably. For safety, giving a vaccination too high or too low can lead to injury and unnecessary discomfort. So it's very important to help the vaccinator by wearing perhaps a tank top with a jacket over top, or a loose fitting t-shirt where you can pull the entire sleeve up over the shoulder, as long as we can feel and, you know, and see the bony top part of the shoulder all the way down to the armpit.
All right. Well, at least the weather is cooperating with that sort of
yes.
thing. That we can, yeah,
yes.
That'll make it a little easier than it was earlier
yes.
at the beginning of the rollout.
Some of the questions that we're getting too, I should mention, Eric, are about consent. Now that, you know, ages 12 and up are eligible. Just a point of fact is that we're able, that consent can be given by age 16 and 17 and older, of course, independently. So to help move things along, if those age groups, you know, want to attend and receive a vaccination, they can.
Okay, yeah, that's important to note. So,
yeah.
If you're under 16, so between 12 and 15, you do need parental consent, but 16, 17 and up, you can give the consent on your own.
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks very much, Charles.
My pleasure. Thank you, and have a great day.
Provincial government announced that they have formed a new committee that will oversee the new unknown neurological disease that has impacted 48 New Brunswickers. The oversight committee is made up of two co-chairs, Dr. Natalie Banville of Vitality Health Network and Dr. Edward Hendricks of Horizon Health Network, along with six neurologists and one member from public health. This team will supervise all clinical and investigative research surrounding the unknown neurological disease, which will hopefully paint a better picture of where this disease is coming from. The degenerative disease has no known cause at the moment, and there are no obvious similarities between the patients, other than they are all in New Brunswick. New Brunswick's Minister of Health, Dorothy Shepherd, had no additional details in terms of where the disease comes from or whether or not it's infectious, but she did outline how the Oversight Committee will collect data about the disease.
Detailed information is needed to better understand and may help determine if there is an environmental or infectious source of these cases, and if so, to help identify ways to prevent more cases from occurring. Data collected will be incorporated into the investigation to help identify potential sources of the syndrome. In May, Public Health began calling individuals to schedule appointments to conduct the surveys. The first interview was completed on Wednesday, May 26. To date, 5 surveys have been conducted, 5 more are scheduled for this week, and several more are being followed up on. And to date, despite extensive medical investigation, a diagnosis for the 48 individuals identified in this cluster has not yet been determined. These 48 individuals require additional investigation. At the federal level, Public Health New Brunswick has engaged with the Public Health Agency of Canada, CJDSS, the National Medical Laboratory Outbreak Management Division, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, Zoonotics Division, and subject matter experts from BC Centre for Disease Control. We have started a full investigation into these cases. We are dedicated to reviewing all the case files of those under investigation and have faith that this diligence will pay off. The mandate of the Oversight Committee is to provide expert second opinions on the identified cases, to ensure due diligence, and to rule out other potential causes. This work will involve, but isn't limited, to reviewing the case definition, medical charts, and recommendations for any further laboratory testing if needed, identifying individuals or their proxies that may need re-interviewing, new examination, and/or evaluation and further testing, identifying gaps in the electronic medical records and recommending areas for improvement moving forward, identifying potential requirements for further laboratory pathology testing of human samples, including recommendations related to what should be tested for and which samples should be captured, and scanning potentially applicable research.
Reporters asked twice if there was a potential environmental cause, but didn't get a definitive answer. Minister Shepherd says that in short, it can't be ruled out, but neither can any other possibilities.
I think it's really important to keep in mind that, you know, that we can't have a narrow focus here. We must examine any and all possibilities. And as those possibilities evolve, you know, we'll certainly share them with you. But the fact is that the reason that we are going to such lengths with these, you know, with the steering committee and with the investments is that we need to allow the science to do their investigation and their work. And by focusing on any one element could just take us in the wrong direction.
She also couldn't say whether there were activities or foods that New Brunswickers should avoid. As of today, the province is focusing on getting in contact with patients and their families.
It's very important that the families understand that we are in a methodical process to help them, to understand what's happening. And we know that it is an anxious time. We know that that some people have passed away and their families would like to know why. And so we're going to continue forward. And the message is that we will be in communication with them to help them understand the process that's happening. A letter will be going out today to all families and individuals to let them know how this process is unfolding, to give them assurances that they are not forgotten, that we understand they are waiting. And it will take, again, the next 6 to 8 weeks in order to get to each one individually for their interviews.
Mount Allison University announced the 6 recipients of honorary degrees for 2021, including 2 Chief Medical Officers of Health. Dr. Bonnie Henry of British Columbia and Dr. Jennifer Russell of New Brunswick were both awarded honorary degrees for their work during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Bonnie Henry graduated from Mount Allison University in 1986 and received a Bachelor of Science degree. Pierre Lassonde is also a recipient of an honorary degree. He is the former chairman of the Franco-Nevada Gold Mining Corporation. Lassonde recently donated $5 million to Mount Allison's Fine Arts Department and subsequently had the School of Fine Art named after him. Liberal MP Dominic LeBlanc will also receive an honorary degree as a longtime representative of Beauséjour in the House of Commons. Another Mount Allison alumnus and CEO of Energy Storage Corporation, NRS Store Incorporated, Annette Verschuren, was awarded a degree. According to their website, NRS Store Incorporated builds, owns, and operates energy storage projects that reduce environmental impact. Finally, Chief Terry Paul of Member 2 First Nation in Nova Scotia will also receive a degree. Chief Paul has been elected as Chief of Member 2 for 37 consecutive years. Honorary degree recipients will be recognized in person in the spring of 2022, along with those who were awarded degrees in 2020. A fully functional kitchen is being assembled piece by piece in an old science lab of Port Elgin Regional School. Educational assistant Chris Morrison, along with a small team of fellow staff, have been holding a raffle after raffle to help fund the construction of the kitchen. Morrison also procured a number of grants for the project, including $7,000 from the New Brunswick Children's Foundation just 2 days ago. The kitchen is part of a multifaceted, hands-on learning experience to teach students about food, commerce, and the environment.
Our kitchen is going to be like a fully functional kitchen so that during the course of the day, there will likely be a schedule for classroom visits to go in. And if they want to prepare a crock pot full of soup or whatever with produce that we've carried out or brought from the garden, something along that line to teach them some good life skills as well. And so many of our kids, like, they don't have gardens at home. And a lot of the food, like a carrot, for instance, like, we get so excited and they pull a carrot out of the ground. Wow, there's a carrot, you know, that's where it came from. It didn't come off the shelf in a grocery store. And they can actually take the food and prepare it for their own healthy snacks and give them some exposure to some different kinds of vegetables, like all the different greens there are out there, like kale and spinach. That's a lot of them have never even tasted. You know, so just to expose them to some different things.
Port Elgin Regional School also has a four-season greenhouse built, ready to grow vegetables for the school cafeteria program. Principal Christoph Becker says growing their own produce will lower cafeteria prices, which should help lower income and food insecure students.
And besides the curricular outcomes, I also envision this as a place where after school, children have a place to go. Because unfortunately for Port Elgin, my dream has always been they need to do more. That's why we brought the rink in, and it's the same with this kitchen. We want a place for them to be after school that they can learn. And I hope that we find partners that will, you know, run a program after school for kids in our kitchen and do those types of things. And also when we have events like basketball, they used to rent the kitchen, the cafeteria. Now they could use our own kitchen, right? They don't have to book it anymore. We could just say, yes, you can use it and free of charge, or we could charge them and make a little money ourselves.
The school has received a number of donated kitchen supplies, but is sparing no costs when it comes to larger appliances.
We're a very eco-friendly school, and I hate to see appliances leaving here in 5-10 years.
Yeah.
These are made to last, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to pay the little extra so that we are stewards of the environment.
This environmental consciousness is being taught to their students in a hands-on, fully engaged way.
Our school is going down this environmental path because this year during COVID, I think, we wanted to teach differently. Well, we want to do it anyway, all the time. We want to do inquiry-based learning, experiential learning, where kids are hands-on and learning in a way that matters to them, not just receiving passively. And that's why all these initiatives are so important to us, right? It's the way that we do things is changing at Port Elgin. It can no longer be the teacher delivering knowledge and they regurgitate it back. They have to be part of the process. They have to understand and research and do things. And we feel that is a better model because disengagement in education is high provincially and in our school. And we want to address that. And I think this whole project, food forest, kitchen, greenhouse, is addressing that issue as well, besides all the side benefits of food security and the other. So it's a big deal.
Fundraising is still underway. Classes are even competing with each other, since the class with the highest raffle tickets sold gets a party.
Okay, so what we're doing right now, June the 11th, we're going to have, that's our raffle draw date. We're having 11 prizes drawn on that day. They are major, awesome prizes. And I'm not just saying that because I'd like to sell more tickets. We've got barbecues donated. Like, people have been so generous. We've got lawn furniture, we got bistro sets, we've got gift cards, we've got 3 staycations, like PEI, Moncton, Miramichi, and Heart Island. I'm not sure if you've heard of that or familiar with that. It's around Fredericton area. And like, people have thrown in things. If you say like Heart Island, oh, there's a restaurant here, they'll donate a a gift card and a tent and a couple of tents actually. It's a big smoker from a Capital A Home Hardware. That's amazing. But anyway, tickets are $10 each. They can e-transfer. And it's raffle, P-E-R-S, at gmail.com.
All of that information will be available on cgmafm.com. Listeners with kitchen supplies they would like to donate should call the school at 506-538-2121. Speaking of Port Elgin, two young leaders took it upon themselves to organize disability awareness activities at their school. Maisie Carter and Lexi Lewis, grade 7, put together a walk-in roll event with the help and supervision of a few adults.
We got an email from the school, and they were forwarding a message on from Rebecca Kent, and she's the one that organized in our region the Disability Week.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that we could do a Disability Week at our school for those who have an illness or like a disease that cannot walk or hear or are blind.
The goal of a walk-in role was to help their peers empathize with people who have disabilities or disabilities different from their own and how inaccessibility might impact their lives. The students tried using wheelchairs, among other accessibility tools and exercises, for a few minutes throughout the course of Disability Awareness Week. Carter and Lewis say that it's important to participate in Disability Awareness Week in one way or another.
I just think that we should all, each school should a walk like this for in this week, and I think we should just teach more people about disability.
In the spirit of awareness, there is a list of books written by disabled activists on notyourinspiration.org. That's all for the Tangent Bar Report this week. Get in touch with any leads, tips, or feedback at news@chmafm.com. I'm Meg Cunningham. Thank you for listening.